This is WordPress Weekly, your source for the latest news, plugins, and interviews with influential leaders in the WordPress community. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Marcus Couch.
Welcome to episode 225 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, March 9th, 2016. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Marcus Couch. Marcus, what's up, man?
Well, I was supposed to be in Florida today doing the show with you on the same time zone.
Ah, that's right.
Unfortunately, I did receive a call Saturday that my dad had passed away in his home. So he died in his sleep. And, you know, the last week he spent alive, he was traveling around the country, going to auto races in his RV, and he loved doing that kind of stuff. So, I'm sad to see him go. I got a memorial I got to go to the Midwest next week for. But I appreciate everybody's condolences and everything on Twitter. That means a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure our listeners will join me in offering our condolences to you. I mean, that's
thanks.
Father, man. I mean, he's half the reason you're here, you know. So, man, that's tough news again. I did see the conversation on Twitter and noticed that quite a lot of people in the community passed along their condolences for you. And I don't know, I just thought that was pretty cool to see that.
Yeah, I appreciate that a lot, and it's it was unexpected, but you know, I've gone through so much relatives dying and things like that in the past where it was like drawn out with cancer treatments or crazy stuff like that. It just, you know, seemed like they were sick for years, and I don't think that was the case with my dad. I think just something just happened while he was asleep. So whatever it was, I thank God that it had happened that way.
Tough times, man. So, other than that, we do have a guest lined up tonight. In fact, it's a gentleman that we've been talking about having on the show for a long time now. And his name is Scott Kingsley Clark. And that name may sound familiar to you because he was on the show, I think it was last year, where we did a crowdfunding roundtable where we had three people on. We talked about the pros and cons of going the crowdfunding route. That was a great show. We had a lot of great feedback from that episode. And I still occasionally get people who say who wanted to get involved with crowdfunding and look back and say that was a great show and they picked up a lot of great tips from that episode. So
yeah, you know, so much that when I look at the crowdfunding things now and I see that they offer nothing but T-shirts and swag, you know, swag.
You're like,
I'm like, oh, you people. Yeah, you people are doomed.
That's right. So Scott Kingsley Clark is a senior web engineer at 10Up. He's the lead developer of the Pods framework and develops a number of other WordPress plugins. Now, you might have seen him around attending and presenting at WordCamps, meetups, and conferences. And little did I know, but he also plays the baritone ukulele in his music project, Soft Charisma. We'll have to get into that with him a little bit later in the show. But Scott, thanks a lot for taking some of your time out to be with us this evening.
Hey, thank you very much. And you know, I just wanted to say real quickly, Marcus, you know, sorry to hear about that.
Thanks. Well, let me ask you the most important question of the night. Baritone ukulele? You know, most people would just say I play ukulele, but to make that distinction.
Well, that's just the elitist in me rising up.
All right.
No, I'm just joking. I started out with the baritone as a primary instrument years ago. I guess it was 2005 or 2006. One of my mentors helped me get one, and it was really, really cool. And I just started to play it a whole lot, and I just stuck. I just liked the way that the tuning was, and it was small, and there's four strings, very nice and easy, and don't have to get too worried about complicated chords and everything. So it just really was a nice fit.
Is there a ukulele meetup or anything like that?
there probably is. There probably is.
Yeah, if there's not, he's going to create one.
Uke Camp, yeah, I'm starting it now.
I don't think I have any more time available to start leading anything else at the moment.
Ukulele, if I have my, just off the cuff, it's like the Hawaiian guitar. It's a little mini guitar with the strings on it, right?
Right, yeah, that's like the most common one.
I mean, I think of Hawaii when
a small little baby one.
Yeah, so great. If you had it nearby, you could play. You know, you could play a tune for us at some point during the show. We've never had a person play a ukulele on WordPress Weekly before, so that would be a first.
Well, I just tuned it just in case. You know, you never know.
Jeez. Oh man, this is cool. So great to have you on the show. We got a lot to talk about here, and for any of our listeners out there, I just want to warn you. Some of the stuff we're going to get into is some higher level dev centric stuff that even may go over my head. But that's, you know, that's not hard to do, go over my head. But just a word of warning there for some of the content we're going to get into. But Scott, about this time last year, you had launched the Friends of Pods campaign. It's almost a year old. And for those who don't know what that is, explain it to our audience and what's going on with it in the past year. Give us a year in review.
Sure. So, well, a little further back, Pods started back in 2008?
2008.
Something around that time. It's been so long, it's just crazy to think.
Well, Pods was created in 2008, but you helped take it over in 2011.
Yeah. So we started out as a free plugin, of course, getting donations, and really barely any donations. So most of the time spent on the project was sort of just in our free time and on the job working on projects that used it. And over time, the project grew and grew and had a lot of support needs and everything. And it was kind of getting very difficult to get more contributors together and work on things. And then as we tried to do more things like evolve with custom post types and WordPress, now that they had been added, we started that Kickstarter, and the Kickstarter helped raise some money, but it wasn't enough, and it still kept us going though for a little bit. And then finally we had a sponsor pop in, which was Automattic, and they helped us get there about 70% of the way, and that helped certainly, but we still had growth we needed to do in order to maintain what we needed to produce in terms of, you know, releases and stuff. So we were trying to figure out how can we get our donations more steadily and how can we sort of improve the process of doing a donation and sort of maybe even reward our donors. And we came up with this idea at WordCamp DFW 2014. And that was actually alongside the Pods Camp, our first Pods Camp. So Josh Pollock and I sat together and we were discussing, like, we were just trying to figure out what can we do. And Josh came from a public radio sort of semi-career thing he was doing for a little while, and turns out that's actually they have a pretty good solution there on the public radio side, where what they do is they sort of have this like in my area. They have Friends of KXT or whatever, which is like the local station that has NPR and PBS type of stuff. And they do music, and there's also, you know, other stations like that. And they have these membership programs where you can become a member and support the radio station and offer a certain amount either monthly or annually. And every year, you know, they'll ask you, do you want to re-up your membership? You want to help us out again? And they do those membership pledge drives. So we thought about what can we do to sort of modernize that for plugins, and that's what we came up with, the Friends of Pods program. And basically it's the same thing. We just sort of – we take recurring donations. It's all centered around recurring donations where you can become a friend at a certain level, and then certain levels get some perks, like maybe some discounts at some companies we've discussed specialized discounts for. Those can be hosting companies or services or plugins, all sorts of things. We're constantly trying to get some additional rewards in because we're about to have that year mark where a bunch of people are going to get their renewing rewards, so we want to get them some new ones to choose from. So that's sort of what Friends of Pods is, trying to get us to be more stable.
And how has that worked out for you? How many members do you have? Because Marcus and I distinctly talked about this Friends of Pods program when it launched last year, and Marcus's feedback was sort of, well, you know, he probably remembers what he said, but he pretty much said, why bother? Or somewhere along the lines of, you know, he doesn't see this working at all.
Well, to clarify, it was.
Just get you to clarify what you said.
I will explain my position, and I can be retorted at any point, so please tell me if I'm wrong. is I didn't see the inherent value of it from the initial pitch the way that you describe it. Now seems a lot better. That it's around the plugin and it's basically like-minded users and you can contribute and talk to each other and things like that. Yeah, that's huge. I mean, I do that same thing now with themes that I frequently use, and there are private Facebook groups for those. So same type of thing, but obviously in your level, the membership model worked very well because that also helped to support the plugin.
Yeah. So I guess 6 months into it, we did a transparency report, and we didn't pick up as much steam as we had hoped, but that I think we could all pretty much tie that directly into the fact that we were so far behind on development. We had spent so much time on support and maintenance releases and everything that we just were pushing back feature releases. And because we hadn't had a major release with a major feature that people had been asking for, we just didn't see sort of the response that we were hoping to get. But over the past 6 months since our transparency report, we've actually gotten another, almost, I think we doubled our friends list. So we started out with, about 6 months ago, 22 friends and sponsors, and now we're about 40. We just signed on another higher level partner yesterday, WP Engine. So it's
wow, and based on the news I've seen recently, that's the third partner, because you had recently announced that Racket Genius actually stepped on board as a gold partner.
Yeah. So
we have
Automattic is of course our pillar sponsor, our primary sponsor, and Optin Monster stepped in last month. That was in February, very beginning of February, and that was really awesome of them to become our first gold sort of sponsor. And then we had Rocket Genius step in mid-month last month as well as our second partner. And then I guess it was this week WP Engine came in as a silver partner. So they're not at the gold level, but still they're significantly helping us maintain the ecosystem and keep things growing. So it's not like I can downplay that. It's definitely helping.
So let me ask you something from a fundraising standpoint and from a membership standpoint and things. What are your expenses? Is it just the labor of the coding and the resources in terms of the ticket system and things like that? What else is there in terms of the development cycle in something like this? Just for those out there that are curious.
Sure. Yeah, so operational costs have sort of gone down over the past year because we used to have Josh Pollock as a main part of our team, but then he sort of went off and did his cool stuff with Ingot and Caldera WP. So this sort of allowed us to reduce our costs, which helped us with our expenses. But overall, our main expenses are our two team members, which is Phil Lewis. He's been around with us since Pods 2.0, which is in back in 2010 or 11, maybe even 12, and then Jim True, who just joined us about a year and half ago, who started out with helping us with support, but now he's really taking a lot more on with community management and working on the new docs stuff. So those are our two main expenses, and to pay them, we just basically make sure they can have enough to give us, you know, a dedicated amount of time every month throughout the month and not have to worry about them trying to make money on the side. So it's kind of tough as like someone who's not actually getting paid for pods, because I'm the only one that's not, like, I'm the only one that's putting in a bunch of time that doesn't get paid, but I've invested a lot of my time and money over the years, so it's not really a big deal for me. I just believe in the project.
So the question I have is, I'm a believer that if you need money to develop a plugin or whatever, then there's no way you can rely on donations. It seems like it never works. Just sell the plugin for a price. That way you're making money, and that will help fund the continued development and support. But as far as I know, Pods has been free for, I think, its entire lifetime.
Yep.
Why don't you put a price tag on Pods and just be done with it instead of having all these different partnership programs to try and fund it without putting a price tag on it?
Well, Just first before I go into that, I do want to note that as of this past month, we did reach full funding, so we are completely funded by partners and our friends. There's still lots of growth to do in the future, but so we're still seeking new friends and new partners and everything for that. But I think overall, as a free plugin, yeah, donations is really a tough thing to base your plugin around, especially as someone trying to focus on it. So it's as a plugin, like I would actually say the best plugin model, in my opinion, I've ever seen was something like Easy Digital Downloads. So they've got add-ons, they got support, premium support and stuff like that, and that's really nice to deal with as a developer working on projects with EDD. So, you know, we've talked about going that direction before, but really the main crux of our problem with that was we started out to be free. We wanted everything to be free in some way, and we knew we could figure it out because so many people believed in us, and we knew that really all we were missing was, you know, a few people to, you know, back us. Like Automatic jumped in and really changed a lot of things for us. But I don't know. It's kind of difficult to make a decision like that, because if you do that, you then forgo all of your backing. You no longer really can rely on like a company like Automatic or other companies that especially become partners in the past few months. If you go to the premium model, it's like, what? Why are they even, you know, sponsoring it? There's no intrinsic value for them because I'm making money either way, you know. So it's tough because that investment to go off on your own is a lot of money and time, and there's major issues for me. Like, first of all, I didn't really want to work on pods full time myself. I still want to be part of the bigger ecosystem of working on projects in like a firm setting. Like I'm at 10UP, for instance. So I work on a lot of different large scale projects. And what that brings me is a lot of insight into things we can bring back into pods and things we can do better and how things perform. And lots of those tips and tricks I learned from 100 people over at 10UP. So, you know, there's a lot of value in that for me. But I mean, back to the end user, someone wants to go use a plugin on WordPress, and we deal with a lot of people coming over from different CMSs and a lot of people that are just starting out as developers. And I have to hand it to all the things that were out there when I started. Like, I really want to be that for someone else. I want to pay it forward. And I think our team wants to pay it forward as well. So, you know, even our team, they're not really making buku's bucks, you know. So they're making enough to be comfortable, to be able to pay their rent. They're both single, so they don't have other expenses. So it works for us as a team, and I think that's important. That's probably one of the most important parts.
You got to be immensely proud of the fact that you have this system set up where your funding can be powered by partners and friends and individuals. And for you to say that you're completely funded through this program, I mean, that's got to be a vote of confidence, and B, just a great feeling to know that there's that type of interest level out there to make sure that Pod sticks around and succeeds and has continued development.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely. When Automatic did that first vote of confidence in us, you know, they said, hey, how about we help you out, you know? And that was amazing because all of a sudden it validated, like, everything I believed in, everything I had been working for, and it was just nice to have someone else, you know, see that value in what we're doing.
In terms of Automatic, who pitched who in terms of the support?
Let's see. Okay, so I reached out to Matt first to ask him, how do you run a project like an open source project and try to maintain contributors and keep things going forward if you don't really have, you know, a ton of
you don't have VC backing
stuff. Yeah, so he came back and we set up a call to talk about, you know, some of those questions I had, and in the end of it, he understood already what I was all about and what Pods was doing and what we were trying to do overall with, you know, providing a free plugin that is like very valuable to people, especially developers just coming up and starting, or even advanced developers. And he I guess it was him that pitched the idea of backing, you know, like, well, what if we, you know, help you out? And that was a surprise for me because I was like, wow, you know, I mean, I knew that Automatic was doing well, but I didn't come into it expecting, oh, hey, can you hand me some money? I was just looking for advice, you know. I was like, I was at the burnout point at that point. Like, Kickstarter had finished, I ran out of money, and things got delayed with developers I was working with because I had paid people to do certain things, and there was ramp-up time, and then there's no way to sync everything up, and then we had our new baby. So I was ready to just be like, okay, I just can't do this. And I think that he just came along at the right time.
So we've talked about a lot of the financial aspects around the project and the foundation, but for our listeners out there, some of them may be thinking, well, what the hell is this PODS framework? So explain to us what PODS is and what it does and why it's useful.
PODS. Okay, so it's not a container that you get shipped to your home.
That's right. That's what I think of.
Let's start out there.
Yeah, hopefully you don't get sued by Apple. Well, you don't have the I in front of it, so you should be okay.
And it's not an acronym like PODS is, like the PODS containers. So it's just like, you know, little pea pods of information that you can sort of build on for your site. So really, the high level thing is we're a content development framework. So you can build lots of things with our code as well as the admin UI. You could just install a plugin and start adding post types, taxonomies, fields to any of the different objects out there. There's so much you can do there just with a couple of clicks. And that's really the basis. But there's a lot more bigger features like our relationship engine, which is humongously just awesome because you can do some really cool things with it.
So okay, let's talk example because that's kind of vague.
Yeah, that's what I was going to go with.
So let's say I want to do a site about basketball. What will PODS do for me in terms of bringing in and distributing content in other ways? Tell me what you would do given that task.
I've worked on a basketball site before. That's
okay. Nice. Perfect.
But that was years ago. So basically, I mean, you can create schedules. You can create a new content type to manage your you know, scores, your schedules, your lots of different data that surrounds statistics like player information. There's a lot of things you can do. It's not super, super easy to do when you're doing a lot of different data connections because you sort of have to enter data into different forms. We're actually releasing one of our most signature features in this next release, which sort of makes all that easier. But
how does it make it easier? Is it like a
– it's a form within a form.
Ingest like a CSV or something like that?
Well, so what you do is you have a if you're managing your schedule, and you can go and add a bunch of entries into it right there, and it's sort of like a form within a form. We're using the WordPress modal and AJAX and all that stuff to Backbone. It's entirely powered by Backbone and underscore templates, so it's really next generation for us, and it just does a whole lot of things to make it easier, so you don't have to move around on a bunch of different pages and. It integrates with other plugins, so like if you have WPS SEO on that post type and you're opening up the modal, it'll appear there. So it's kind of nice setup, I think. But so you would create your content types for your basketball site, and you would manage your information. You can pass along access to other people. But a lot of that is sort of WordPress defaults, though. That's custom post types. So you could do that with code as well, just without PODS. But PODS makes it easy, and we add a bunch of other features alongside that. And I think those other features are really super beneficial. But also as a developer, I have to say that when I'm building a quick site for someone or just for myself, I really don't want to spend 5 hours doing a bunch of stuff every time and having to maintain that code on all my different sites. Mm-hmm. So having something like PODS to sort of take that weight and carry it for me is really nice. You know, I can quickly prototype a real complicated site in PODS and then show it off as a prototype and say this is how things could work, and then we can start taking things out or utilizing other things and increasing performance and then doing all code-based. You know, there's lots of things you could do, but it's a great starting point, I think, to play around with things, even as an advanced developer.
So let's explain to our audience, because, you know, once I start hearing custom post types, content types, taxonomies, my head starts going, woo, woo, I don't know what the hell is going on. So first
off,
you
had video on for that.
No. Yeah. Put the propeller head on. It's spinning really fast. But so let's start off with custom post types, which is a relatively new feature in WordPress. But why? What is that? Explain, what is that?
Sure. So back in WordPress, you know, whenever, years ago, all you had were posts and pages and sort of WordPress, and everyone that was using WordPress was starting to use it in a much more advanced way. And WordPress actually had custom post types sort of baked in already. It just wasn't, there was no API to use it. There was no UI to utilize. It was all in the database. And eventually pods came around, and we sort of filled a big gap there with our own advanced content types, which created their own tables. We actually started out as we were the first custom post type plugin. So we moved away from that, and then we came back around 2.0. But it's basically a way to categorize content and have their own fields and have their own interface separate from blog posts. So you don't have a bunch of blog posts alongside maybe your people listing, your directory. You know, back before all this stuff was there, all people would use was categories, and they would just tag and categorize everything. And there would be tons of categories, and it would be super hard to manage, and it would just be messy. And
well, that explains the excitement from developers when it was added to WordPress. I guess they could avoid all that mess. And when we talk about, now I've learned that when we talk about taxonomies, I think, is it categories and tags? Those are both taxonomies, correct?
That's right. Yeah, a taxonomy is basically a categorization of types of information, like categories, post tags, post formats, things like that.
And so what's the signature difference between a custom post type in WordPress and what you describe as a custom content type in pods?
Well, of course, since pods 2.0, we cover everything now. So, but originally we had things called advanced content types. And that gives you your own tables. And as you add fields into pods, it creates new columns in the database. And it's super, super beneficial when it comes to performance, especially way back when there wasn't much performance to be had for custom post types in meta. Like things now, you have ElasticPress to sort of work around some of those problems. But advanced content types sort of helps you do a lot of things with data that needs to be completely segregated from post types. So say you have a million records, and you have a site that has 10 posts. And on this million records are all financial information, and you want them completely separate. There's lots of ways to work around that, but if you have 20 fields, that becomes problematic to work with. Then you have to work in with a lot more of workarounds, and it's just very, very difficult to work with. So a lot of people coming from Drupal especially were very familiar with advanced content types, because that's sort of what pods started out as. It was sort of like, how do we make WordPress more Drupal-y?
And so, yeah, in fact, back in the day, I mean, Drupal is sort of pods' roots. I mean, that's how it started back in 2008.
Matt Gibbs, who founded the plugin, and I jumped in a week later. Matt started as a Drupal developer and came over to WordPress for a project and needed some stuff to happen. So he just sort of ran in, did some stuff, and then he released it. And then
how can I get this cool Drupal stuff into WordPress? And well, there you go. Just he whipped up a plugin. So over the years, I've met and talked with you at WordCamps, and I know you've tried to explain pods to me, and it hasn't worked.
Sticking.
But I sort of understood. I mean, it had an audience. I understand and know the importance of it to a lot of developers out there. It has its usefulness for a set of people. But out of all the improvements that have taken place in WordPress over the years, which, you know, one of them is the custom post types and taxonomies and things of that nature, is there still a vast need for something like pods to exist? I mean, is it still offering and doing things that you just can't do in WordPress core by default?
If pods was a plugin that only managed content types and let you add new custom post types and taxonomies and all that stuff, no, I don't think it would be beneficial to continue. But pods Pods' intrinsic value is based on the ability to do everything. So you can actually create your content structures. So you create a new custom post type. You add your fields of all different types of fields that are sort of built in. And then you can add relationship fields that relate a post to a taxonomy or a post to a post or a user to a post or a user to a taxonomy. And lots of different relationships just about from anything to anything. So there's a lot of power there. And really, Pods helps you grow beyond posts and pages. And a lot of those same restrictions for posts and pages exist for custom post types as well. So it's just a recent post on the WordPress.org developer blog sort of notes that the WordPress repo, the plugin repository for WordPress.org is sort of user centric. I mean, a lot of developer stuff can be found on GitHub, of course, and there's just a lot of users coming to WordPress. There's, I mean, millions of sites, you know, so there's millions of developers and users commingling, and something like Pods is actually a big part of that ecosystem. Even though we only have about 30,000 to 40,000 active installs. It's a big part because something like Pods plays a role in someone's path in developing with WordPress. Now, they could start using Pods and then decide, no, I don't want to use Pods anymore. I want to build it myself. I'm 100% fine with that. I want to help them grow. I want them to use the best thing for them. Maybe it's another plugin, but maybe more importantly, maybe they know how to do it with code themselves now. So that's great because, you know, I want Pods to be either a stepping stone or something someone can lean on to learn things with WordPress, come into WordPress as a new user, a developer. I want to be that stepping stone. And for us to grow, I think that's been a major part of our growth over the years. And really, it's our transparency there in the fact that, you know, we're not trying to make you use Pods and say that Pods is the best plugin. Of course, there are other plugins that have other features, that have other benefits, and we help our users every day in our Slack channel telling them, hey, maybe you should probably use another plugin for this one little piece, or maybe, you know, Pods isn't such a great fit for this project based off of what you've described. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, and that may be counterintuitive to, you know, running a plugin for some people, but for us, you know, we're invested in WordPress, and I think Pods does play a big role in, you know, someone's life, sort of life path inside of the WordPress development.
And have you given any thought to the commercial aspect of this in terms of, is there a way to ingest, you know, databases and that kind of thing to try and bring other corporate entities into WordPress to try and get them off their proprietary platforms that they may be using?
Are you talking about like migrating from something like Expression Engine to WordPress?
Sure, and there's even more obscure ones out there than that, sure.
Yeah, that's one of the big things about our growth through Friends of Pods. We now have the ability to sort of, we've been streamlining our feature release process already, so as soon as we get some of our releases starting to go out again, we're going to be focusing on trying to bring some additional migration plugins in. We're working on this big migration project right now, which entails migrating from just a number of different content management systems over into WordPress plus Pods. So it could bring everything in over to the post types and everything and helps you map those pieces of data and everything. So it's complicated because, you know, Drupal has three versions out that are sort of in major use. So it's kind of hard to plan around some of those limitations, but it's certainly not impossible, and it's certainly beneficial for a lot of people. On the commercial aspect, though, I think for us, you know, we want to enable things to happen, so it may at some point become something where we sort of just collaborate with someone building a commercial solution, because a lot of times, you know, these are for paid projects. You know, someone moving from Drupal to WordPress is usually using Drupal because they're paying a lot of money for development and for maintenance and stuff, and you know, coming over to WordPress, that process, they're paying someone to make that happen. So, you know, I don't think that'd be too bad of an idea to have a commercial thing, but it certainly won't be anything that Pods itself will offer. We're not really planning on offering any commercial add-ons or plugins, but we definitely want to enable people to grow and enable people to have their own commercial plugins.
And so what's the portability of the data that you put into Pods? Can you take that, you know, you mentioned you can set up another site, no problem. Can you, is the data that you enter in as well, is that portable into new sites as well in terms of, you know, what you enter into the system?
Yeah, so our data is stored the same way WordPress stores its data. So we have our configurations that you can import and export between sites. We're working on some new things that will make it a little easier and sort of using REST API to sort of ping configurations back and forth, however. And for content, though, it's really this the base WordPress post types and custom meta and custom taxonomies, all that stuff is just sort of inside of the meta. Mm-hmm. So you can migrate it using the WordPress export tool and then import it to any other WordPress site. And everything should work pretty nicely. In terms of our advanced content types, we do offer export through our UI. So you can export to CSV and all sorts of other things, and you can import however you'd like. But that process is, again, something we're looking into improving. But there are plugins that can consume those files relatively easy. So it's not a huge barrier.
Good.
So a project that I've kept my eyes on, but it's one of those technical projects, and you're knee-deep in technical stuff. That's your area of expertise. But I've been reading into this, and I don't really understand its significance, but I do see the desire for it to exist in core, and that is this thing called a Fields API, and you're part of this new project called the Fields API Project. So describe what that is and why I, as a user, you know, what benefits does it have for users?
Sure. Yeah. So let me first explain what Fields API is and its goal. So we started roughly 2 to 3 years ago trying to figure out what can we do to sort of make this craziness of all these different custom field and all these tons of plugins that had their own frameworks inside of them to build interfaces for posts and settings and user profiles and all that stuff. So like there's hundreds of plugins out there and there's new ones being added every single day to the repo. And you know, it's difficult to work with because, you know, the data portability is a big concern because people will sort of store things differently depending on what their preference is and their familiarity with WordPress itself. And we came up with this idea, what if we sort of create an API that makes it easier to develop meta boxes for WordPress and sort of do some things like that. And maybe later on we can expand it. But over the past year, I've spent over 250 hours on this project on the clock at 10 up. And it has been a major sort of overhaul of our initial idea, and we sort of expanded it. And we took this idea, and so what the basis of it now is, the Fields API allows you to create new sections, controls, which are the inputs that you see on the screen, and fields, which are how the data is stored. And you can create these things on any admin screen that you see for settings, for user profile, for any custom post type or post or page. You can add these things willy-nilly. So you can add them right into place, and everything will look just like WordPress core has it look. And everything will be very easy to use. And at the same time, you know, as a developer, and I know we're going to sort of stick this to a user-only perspective, but as a developer, there's a whole other humongous part of this because it exposes all of your configuration for your site to plugins so that plugins can sort of add to this configuration for themselves and they can utilize it. So a plugin or actually Core's REST API can then consume this configuration and send it out to an application. And this is a big part because WordPress.com's iOS app, I use this as a big example, has no ability to add custom post type screens with custom fields and everything because it doesn't know what things are. It doesn't know all these plugins have registered. It's has to have all these custom, you know, logic and everything all built into the app itself. But this Fields API unifies one singular API across all of WordPress. And this is a big thing because we've previously had the settings API, we had the customizer API, we had metaboxes, which were their own thing.
No, it kind of sounds like you're making string theory API. You're unifying everything.
Unify universe API, that's what we're going to call it. But yeah, so it's a big thing, and it's certainly not a small undertaking. I sort of jumped into it thinking, oh, hey, I have some time on the side, and I can do this, sure. But you know, it's taken 20 people to give us feedback because we involved developers of all these different plugins. We reached out to them to see, you know, can you give us some feedback? What you like about your own plugins and what you'd like to see and, you know, features that you have. And we did that process, and then we grew from there and had contributors help us with different areas of this. So it's a big, big undertaking. And I have to say, I've gone completely insane multiple times already just trying to wrap my head around how to do something because it's just so large scale.
I don't use custom fields. I only actually pretty much use one WordPress website on a daily basis, but I don't use custom fields. But when I hear the term custom fields, there's one plugin that comes to mind. It's like a household name within the inner WordPress circle, and that is Advanced Custom Fields, and that seems to be the go-to plugin many developers use, and you must have experience with it. But why do you think that is? Why do so many developers like that particular plugin?
Sure. Well, first of all, you want to add a custom field. There you go. You know, it's very easy to use. Very simple. There's not, you know, a humongous advanced feature set on it. It's really directly targeted at the ability to add custom fields to different areas of WordPress. And that's super beneficial. You know, like you said, you know, it's got, I think, over 1 million active installs or something like that. I can't imagine trying to maintain support myself. That's why I understand why he went the pro way. Unfortunately, that sort of has side effects, but I don't want to get into that. So I think that, you know, a plugin like that sort of illustrates the reason why it's important for WordPress itself to have a unifying API, as well as you know, the sheer amount of plugins that exist other than Advanced Custom Fields. You know, everyone's trying to do these things, and everyone has their own ways of doing it, and even Core has its own ways. In a lot of cases, almost every part of Core I've touched so far has custom markup. It doesn't expose the configurations at all for even what's there now. It's all very hard-coded, very hard to work with, lots of different actions, different markup. Maybe it's divs, maybe it's tables, you know, all sorts of caveats, some custom inputs and everything. It's really a smorgasbord because it's the result of years and years. It's over 10 years, so maybe 11 or 12 now, of WordPress growing and just being, you know.
Maybe instead of like a Journey to the Center of the Earth, we could do a movie and you could direct it. Journey to the Center of WordPress is Fields API or something.
The core.
Yeah.
Yeah, core API. I'm afraid of how deep I might go.
You might not come back.
It's going to get dark.
So what's the status of the project, and how can people get involved if they're interested?
Sure. So we have a GitHub, of course.
Who doesn't have a GitHub these days?
What is GitHub? So we do have a GitHub, of course, and the location of that is github.com/wordpress-fields-API.
Okay, I'm going to have to link to this in the show notes.
No, yeah, just rewind it. I switched it. It's at my username now. So I'll send you a link to it. You can post that. But you can find it on, you know, search WordPress Fields API. You'll find it. Or even just search GitHub WordPress Fields API. We have updates coming out tonight, actually tomorrow morning, after I get some review on it. We have a blog post coming out with a big update of where we're at, the significant amount of progress we've created over the past couple of weeks, what we need left. What's left? What do we need from developers? What do we need from people that would actually use this API? And where we could use help for contributing, because we do have a lot of areas that still need help, need some people to look at it, review it, tell us if they see any major flaws in our ideas, but so far it's looking very nice.
Good to hear.
That's the beauty of open source. Whether it's a project inside or not, you always need more hands on deck.
Yeah, and this is huge. I don't know how. Like, we only have me as the main guy, and then Helen is sort of serving as a consultee type of core team person that sort of assigned to us to help us along our way and give us a lot of insight and ideas and feedback and stuff. But
when you say it's huge, are you talking about its impact or just the scope of the project?
Both. It's a huge scope. It's a huge impact. And I'm trying to do it sort of by myself because I'm trying to involve a lot of people, and I've got some people helping out, like Aaron Brazell and Brent Van Rensenberg, and a number of other people, Nicholas, and all sorts of people. So there's some people that are helping in different areas, but really I would really love to have someone else jump in as well to help sort of provide a lot more.
What kind of qualifications does somebody need to be able to jump in? What type of help are you looking for?
Sure. So I'm looking for someone with WordPress core experience, contributing to core, working on proposal, maybe even feature proposal type of stuff, working on patches, familiar with the process of merging big pieces like this. Someone who can bring to the table engineering experience at maybe a high level, someone who is very familiar with the inner workings of WordPress and the restrictions we have when sort of trying to come up with this idea of merging this into WordPress core. What are our sort of roadblocks? What can we do to make it easier for us to get this to move forward? What's going to hold us back, type of stuff. So looking for someone who can jump in and help us with development, with reviewing the code, with helping us work on the core proposal for the make.wordpress.org blog, looking for some people to help us with some user interface ideas, because there's a lot of stuff still left to do, but it's we're really far. It's just we got to go to the finish line.
Right.
So you're almost up to that 90%, but the last 10%, which of course is what the name 10 Up, the company you work for, is all about. The 10%'s the hardest.
Aha.
See, I know that. I know a thing or two about some development agencies out there. I was just thinking, what if we got Dr. Bunsen and Beaker to create a cloning machine, and we could just clone you, like two or three of you? But I don't know if that would solve the problem. You'd have more hands on deck, but it'd be three Scots.
Yeah, I'm not sure I want too many cooks in the kitchen.
You'd have Scott. To start paying him then.
Yeah.
Too many Scots in the kitchen.
Well, 10UP has been super, super good and super nice because they've given me this time to work on WordPress core, Fields API stuff. And this is, there's no guarantee here. This is a shot in the dark for the most part. So, whether this gets into WordPress core remains to be seen. We still have to get more core contributors to look at it and say yes or no. We need votes. Are we in the right direction? Do you see major issues here? Because we still have to go through that process. And but 10UP has given me a ton of time, and I'm just grateful because this is the project of a lifetime for me. Working on something this big that affects so many sites and so many developers. You don't get that chance every day.
What's bigger, the Fields API project or the REST API?
Depends on how you want to. Yeah, it depends on how you want to sort of contextualize it, because the Fields API touches every part of WordPress and it exposes a lot of different configurations. You still have to build stuff to work with it, but the REST API exposes a lot of things in WordPress, which could then work with the Fields API to make things even better. But the REST API does a lot of things in terms of communicating for advanced development with like JavaScript, and I think that's a huge impact for right now in today's environment. But I think they go hand in hand. I can't really pinpoint what's more important, but I think they are very cut from the same cloth. They really are needed for us to go forward. And, you know, Nason, Matt Mullenweg, everyone's saying that Fields API is a big need for WordPress to keep moving forward and for things like Calypso to succeed and other more advanced JavaScript implementations.
Well, I mean, we've already seen major accomplishment by actually getting this thing called Term Meta, which, again, yeah. I have no idea why it's important, but so many developers are clamoring over, you know, thankful to finally see Term Meta added to core.
Oh, yeah.
But it sounds to me like once we get the REST API, I know that's huge. Marcus and I can't stop talking about, we call it flying cars on this show, because that's the kind of impact it has. But it sounds like once you know, if it does happen, it gets added to core between the Fields API and the REST API, boy, things are going to be looking pretty sweet for developers out there.
For sure. Yeah, and real quickly, before I run out of time here, I wanted to explain what is inside of Fields API right now, because it's important. I think that it's important that both of you understand, as well as people listening. We are very, very, very far. Edit user, we already have all of the WordPress core fields that are in the edit user page accounted for. We have backwards compatibility hooks. Everything is there. We have a couple of to-dos left to like make it look nicer and make it work better, but we've got the edit user screen. We have the edit post screen. We're still working on some things to take over some of those core fields and those screens.
Let's take it one at a time here, like sure. The edit user screen. What does that mean? I'm going to get rid of Jabberwock for the user profile for their social profiles and put something else in? How does it? What's it going to change within the user settings?
So the way things look will not be changing. The way things work will be changing. So all that stuff on that screen right now is all custom HTML markup with PHP conditionals. Very, very dirty in terms of, you know, modern development. So this sort of we register all those fields now programmatically, so now you can access all of that configuration through code. So if you wanted to, you can actually reproduce the entire edit user screen on the front of the site without having to define everything yourself. Mm-hmm. You can just call the form and make sure you have styles and everything, but it will work because it's cool like that.
It also sounds to me that with this API in place, it'll be a hell of a lot easier to create new fields or for plugins to tap into that API to create an interface to create custom fields on those pages.
Exactly. I mean, I got you. Yeah. If you had a plugin that worked to add a user avatar upload field, this wouldn't negate that. It would just mean that that plugin no longer has to build its own field type and its own form and stuff. They would just register their field, and then maybe that's like four lines of code or whatever it might be. So then you have a user avatar field, and then it's done, you know? So it's going to take out a lot of need of extra code that every plugin out there has to have just in order to make things work. Because there's a lot of hacks right now that you have to put into place. So there's the edit user screen. There's edit post screen. We still have some stuff to do there. That's you have the ability right now to add custom meta boxes and have your fields show up rather nicely. Still working on some backwards compatibility hooks and taking over all of those fields on the post editor screen, but making significant progress this week. An important thing to what you just noted about term meta, we built term meta integration, so now you can add fields to the term screen. And that works very nicely. Again, it's just using the same UI, so it's just adding new section headers and fields into that list. Comment edit, you can add meta boxes there as well, but it's the same case as the post edit screen because we don't have all of the main fields taken over yet. But the idea is to take over and override all of these screens entirely by the Fields API in terms of the field inputs. Settings pages is a big one. We have all but two of the six main settings pages covered now. And that's like the general reading, writing, and permalink pages that we have now. And it actually integrates with the settings API, so when you register it with the Fields API for your settings pages, it registers them as settings as well. So now you don't have to do a bunch of extra work to integrate with other things that might be utilizing the settings API. And we still have more stuff to do there because we want to make the Settings API use the Fields API instead. We want it to take over. So we're building a compatibility class right now. We're testing that. Another area looking to do is widget forms. So when you're working to create a new widget, or even as a user using lots of widgets and you have lots of form fields, well, every time you see those fields, someone has to hard code all this stuff to make it work and to show the field on the screen and show the display the value and save the value. And there's so much extra work here that can be done with just a simple, you know, configuration array of what the fields are on that widget. You know, nav menu items could have custom fields. We have a prototype already put together for that. Media, stuff like that. So those are the big areas we're trying to cover. Not every part is 100%, but we are significantly ahead of the curve in terms of, you know, where we're going towards for core inclusion. Not trying to get every single bit of this into WordPress core at once, but the idea is to show the large impact this can have and what's possible.
Man, fantastic. Sounds like you got a lot on your plate, but something you're interested in doing and something you have a passion for. Thanks a lot for coming on the show to share all this incredible information with us. And I do have a better idea now as to how POS works and a lot of the reasons why it's beneficial. And before we close things out here, Marcus, any further questions?
Well, I think it's something that, like anything else, you've got to get in and use it to experience it and determine what the best usage is, whether now or something that you hold on to in the future. So I'm curious myself, and I think I'm going to pay further investigation to both of those in terms of pods and you know, the field info. And really, I'll kind of report on my experience here on the show in terms of a new user into the environment and, you know, what I think it could use from a developer and a business standpoint. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Excellent. So, Scott, how can we keep in touch with you and stalk you on the internets? And are you planning on attending any conferences in the near future?
I am on Twitter. That is Scott K. Clark, all lowercase, of course, just S-C-O-T-T K. Clark. My website is scottkclark.com as well. And you can find me at WordCamps. I was going to go to WordCamp Austin, but I don't know if that's happening for sure yet. I am the lead organizer of WordCamp DFW this year, so I'll be having my hands full in October. That's what we're aiming for. I do plan on going to WordCamp US again. I don't have any plans to go to any other WordCamp unless I am able to make it to WordCamp Europe. So that's the only other one I'm looking forward to in terms of my schedule, but everything else, I'm just trying to lay low and keep working on lots of things, making things happen for WordPress and pods itself.
Yeah, you stay in that room until the Fields API is done, sir.
You get no dessert until it's done.
You know, and by the way, I just wanted to send a note out there. When we had Scott come on the show here during the pre-show, we had some video on it. Right behind Scott, I'm not violating any HIPAA laws or anything, but behind Scott was this massive case of Monster energy drink. I think he's got about 1,000,000 milligrams of caffeine sitting behind him, so he's well prepared to get the last 10% done for the Fields API. Hell, if he starts drinking those cans now, I think he just opened one, he could get it done by this weekend.
Yeah, well, anything is possible.
Well, Scott, thanks again for coming on the show. I had a great time, and look forward to seeing you in person. Probably WordCamp US.
Sounds great.
Awesome. Have a good one. So that was Scott Kingsley Clark of Pods Framework. A great plugin. It's free. It's available from the plugin directory. Just do a search for it. And overall, a great interview. What do you think, Marcus?
I think I can't believe you just called it a plugin directory and not the repository. But
oh, come on now with that.
Very interesting. It's interesting to see the model, and you know, as we talked about last week, I'm getting into the membership game in terms of, you know, doing a lot of membership coaching and teaching people how to do it, and that's just one more model. It's a plug-in with a membership site built around it for support and future releases and, you know, a say in the process. And that's it's a pretty good, you know, model. So for me, it's just another instance that I can point to as something that somebody's doing on a successful basis. And I know he's got a lot more users than he does members, and that's a shame. And hopefully people will have a little bit more awareness of pods and then join in on Friends of Pods as well.
So Scott here, he's still on the air. He's still online with us. We didn't hang up on him. But he is offering to play us a 30-second tune on his ukulele. And this has never happened before. This is the first on WordPress Weekly.
Maybe we should do it as I do my plug-in picks of the week. Maybe he can...
I'll give you a little background. That would be interesting. But, you know, this is cool. This is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You're going to hear it here first. And, Scott, whenever you're ready, let us know. And rip some chords on that thing.
Okay. I just figured I'd do a little sort of a playful take on Strawberry Fields from Beatles, given just the talk we just had.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Fields API. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Fields API forever.
There you go.
That's freaking awesome, man. I really enjoyed that. That's cool.
Wow, you get yourself a theme song.
Yeah, I'm just going to do that, and hopefully I don't get sued.
Oh, man, that's great.
Chop that right out of the show. And
yeah, I mean, put that on the best of for sure. So, awesome, Scott. Again, thanks a lot. Thanks again. Take care. And another WordPress Weekly first.
Awesome.
So, let's see. We've gone pretty long here with the interview. However, there was one important story. We have a couple stories to talk about, but we'll save them for next week. Next week, we'll do an all-news roundup. But there's this one story here I really want to talk about because it's very important, and that is last Friday. No, we've been telling me and Sarah and other people have been telling users that the WordPress plugin directory is the safest place to where you can download and install plugins from. And that's in large part that's because of the gatekeepers we have. Mika Epstein, known as IpstenU, and Pippin Williamson are the two main gatekeepers who review the plugins before they get into the directory or repository, whichever one satisfies Marcus's taste at the time. However, there was a plugin called Custom Content Type Manager who ended up with a new maintainer called WooRanker, and they were added to the sort of list of maintainers who had commit access to the plugin on February 5th. And then February 19th, WooRanker pushed out an update to the plugin that included a something like a communicator file, inserted new code into the plugin's PHP index file, and what he was doing is putting a backdoor into these plugins. And so the plugin updates existed for about 2 weeks. So the plugin is active on about 10,000 sites, and any number of those sites that installed this plugin thinking, well, it's just an update or fixed a couple of bug fixes. Now, they ended up actually making their sites vulnerable to a security threat. And I feel pretty bad for these users because, you know, it's on the change log, it says, it pretty much just says something like fix bugs, or it was pretty generic. And as a user, you trust an update coming from the plugin directory. You think it's going to be beneficial to you. So, you know, it's and in this case, it's definitely not the user's fault if they installed an update to this plugin and end up getting their site hacked, which quite a few people did because of the backdoors, the PHP files. Thankfully, the plugin is fixed. The last known clean version has been uploaded to the WordPress directory. So if you have not updated yet, don't. Or at least update to 0.9.8.6. That is the... it's 0.9.8.9, which is a copy of 9.8.6. Of course, that was the last known good copy. So the version that's on the repo now is clean. You don't have to worry about that. However, if you install the update, you're going to have to go through a mitigation process where you have to clean out your site, remove some files. You might even have to hire a security team, like Security, to go through and clean up your site, which is going to be a real pain. But, you know, looking at this whole situation, and this is the nightmare scenario for the WordPress plugin directory, especially if it was for, like, let's say, Jetpack or Yoast SEO or something that has millions of downloads. But, you know, this, you know, personally, Marcus, this doesn't detract the trust I have in the directory. However, it is a painful and concerning reminder that this is a possibility, albeit rare. It's the exception rather than the rule. And it's just another reminder that everyone out there should be using, you know, maybe some type of security scanning software that monitors file changes on their website. If you can afford it or can find a nice free solution that does that, and make routine backups of your site just in case something like this happens. So just a really, really interesting, painful reminder that that nightmare scenario where what if somebody malicious got in to access to the source code and was able to push out a bad update that thousands of people could potentially install, and we sort of saw that play out last week.
It's, yeah, and you really have to pay attention to what updates are rather than just hitting update all the time, and we all love that feature, but seriously, you have to really pay attention to what is being updated. Look at the change log. Look at exactly what it is. Is it something that potentially could break the site if you update to begin with, let alone the security implications of it? So,
well, unfortunately, in this case, the changelog, the guy who was malicious, it was generic. There's no way you could tell. And as a user, look, you're not going to dig into the code of a plugin and see if it's secure or look at the changes that have occurred. You automatically assume, because it's from the plugin directory, it's got to be okay. Now, the plugins, some people have said, well, we got to have scanning software. All the plugin updates have to be scrutinized. Well, the fact is the Mika and Pippin scan and review the code of plugins before they're actually end up on the directory for users to use. But for plugins that are already existing on the directory, the updates that they push out, those are not scrutinized as much. And really, most of them, there's just too many of them. It doesn't scale. If Pippin and Mika had to scrutinize and scan updates to plugins, they'd never be able to do it. There'd be a backlog years long. So the situation is right now, there's no surefire way to protect against this from happening in the future. It's just a rare possibility that unfortunately it just came to pass this time around. And as a user, your best defense is just routine backups, have a good, sane, common sense strategy, and keep up on things. I mean, hopefully if they're listening to the show, which they should be, who are using this plugin, maybe now they just found out about it, maybe they know about it, but hopefully you got a good backup to go back to. It just sucks all around, and I feel bad for the users, because in this case, or in this situation, it's not their fault.
No, and I wonder, why was that back door left open anyway? Was it just lazy coding?
No, the person who took it over was nefarious, malicious. He put it there on purpose.
Oh.
And it existed on the directory for 2 weeks before it was discovered and reported, and that's when action took place, and they took it down. and then they finally replaced it with a known last known good version. But everybody who had already updated their sites and had the back doors on them have to go through a mitigation process to clean their sites now.
Ugh, terrible.
So I just wanted to pass that story along. Very important, something you have to keep in mind. Man, it just sucks overall. So with that, we'll talk about some stories next Wednesday, including Jetpack's birthday, because that's pretty cool, and I want to highlight some stuff from a post I wrote about that today. But speaking of plugins, Marcus, you've got three brand new ones that why don't you share with our audience?
Oh, I do. And this first one is by, listen, this is going to be a name game today, by Deepin Bajrashara. He is from Nepal. This is his very first plugin to the repository. It is called Video Conferencing with Zoom API. Now, Zoom is something kind of like Video Skype or Google Hangouts, but it's got a lot better fidelity. I've used it a lot, and I even when I was doing my first REST API project was interacting with the Zoom API, but this plugin is actually way better than anything I made. But what it allows you to do is manage your entire meeting structure, your users, show the meetings in posts, short codes, things like that. So it's really good for anybody who's doing conferencing on Zoom and has a WordPress site. You can integrate the two together. So check it out, Video Conferencing with Zoom API. The next one is something that is from Shidikur Rahman. He has given us this, his fourth plugin. It's called Timeline Diagram. It's a responsive WordPress plugin, Jeff, that allows you to create a really cool vertical storyline. So it makes a circular image on the left, and on the right side, it gives you kind of the story. And it's really nice for telling the history of maybe a company or projects within individual projects or revisions or something like that. Really nice. You just create posts, you set the images and the date that you want within the timeline, and then you use one short code on a page and it inserts the entire timeline right there based on the year and the date. Pretty cool. It's called Timeline Diagram.
So I don't know if he's listening, but when I hear something about diagram, the first thing I do is go to the plugin directory page and go to the screenshots section because I want to see what it looks like, and there's no screenshots. Yes. So if you're listening out there, please put some screenshots on there because it's a visual plugin and people want to know what it looks like.
What intrigued me was the header. So you can sort of see in the header what it looks like, and then I downloaded it and tried it, and it works pretty good.
All right.
And I used it, by the way, for when certain staff came on board, actually, for my little demo. The last one is called Easier Excerpts, and excerpts are one of those things that we kind of neglect within the post editor. It's kind of this thing where you just dump text in and you kind of forget about it. But certain parts of themes and other things use excerpts quite a bit in terms of if they're going to show blog posts on the front end with a featured image that is a thumbnail. They will also use excerpts, and generally you can control the amount of characters. Well, what this does is it automatically either expands or fits your content, either contracting or adding based on the length of your excerpt. So you just activate it, and it automatically works. And it's pretty neat. I tried it on a couple of sites that had excerpt problems, like there was a directory that I was using where it would only take 200 characters of the excerpt when it was coming from the company description, and I saw no reason why you had to limit it to that. The page could handle it. It was just tons of white space. So I put this there, and it actually worked, and that's actually how I found it, was looking for a use for that. So if anybody else has a use for it, it's pretty cool. It's called Easier Excerpts, and those are my plugin picks of the week.
Fantastic. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all previous episodes on wptavern.com. And be sure to give us an iTunes review. Let us know if you listen to us on Spotify. Not Spotify, but what's the other?
Stitcher.
Yeah, Stitcher.
Yeah, we got to get registered to Spotify, though, too.
Yeah, I got to get on that. Yes. You may want to ping me and have me do tell me about it again so I can get on it. But, yeah, send us another iTunes review. We haven't read one in a while, and I'd like to read one. Maybe we can get it done on next week's show. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff or the JEFFR0. Marcus?
You can find me at my website, MarcusCouch.com, and also MembershipCoach.com. And we had a ton of people sign up. I hit that, I think, 40 people since the last show. Signed up to the introductory part of it. So I appreciate that, getting on the pre-launch list. If you want to do the same, membershipcoach.com is the website. And you can find me on Twitter at Marcus Couch.
Awesome. So until next Wednesday night, we'll talk to you again soon. Enjoy your weekend. Stay safe. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Have a good one.